fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Magnificent Monday to you. So glad to be with you on this day. It is Monday, the 30th of January. Almost got a whole month in the books, almost, for 2023. And you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Going to have some fun today. Get your week off to a good start. Got a great story for you. 888-914-9149. You can also email the show. Love to hear from you. Love to get your show ideas, questions, comments. The address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can also find me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So I'm going to start off with what many people are calling the story of the year. The story of the year. And it's just really intriguing to me. Read this in the New York Times, and it's essentially called the Luddite Club. The Luddite Club. It's about a group of Brooklyn teens who meet every week in Prospect Park, whether it's raining, whether the sun is shining, whether it's snowing, doesn't matter. And they are dedicated to promoting a life of freedom from social media and technology. So is Mark Zuckerberg in trouble? We're about to find out. And this story was written by Alex Vadukul. And I do apologize, Alex, if I butchered your name there. Alex Vadukul, V-A-D-U-K-U-L, writing in the New York Times. And I just want to share this with you. And I'd love to get your comments on this because this is just a great, great story. It starts off like this. On a brisk recent Sunday, a band of teenagers met in Brooklyn to start the weekly meeting of the Luddite Club, a high school group that promotes a lifestyle of self-liberation from social media and technology. As the dozen teens headed into Prospect Park, they hid away their iPhones or, in the case of the most devout members, their flip phones, which some had decorated with stickers and nail polish. I can totally relate to that one because my daughter is putting stickers on everything right now. She does not have a phone yet. She's just about to turn 7, so I am dreading having that conversation. And nail polish, yeah, this weekend she actually painted the nails of our dog, our black lab, which is, I got some interesting questions about that when I was walking the dog this weekend. But anyway, stickers and nail polish, kids are into that, whatever. So these kids in the Luddite Club, they marched up a hill towards their usual spot in Prospect Park. And this is a mound, kind of a dirt mound. It's far from the crowds in the park. It's kind of out in the woods. And one of the kids that was there was named Odili Zexter Kaiser. That's a great name. Odili Zexter Kaiser. And she's a senior at Edward R. Murrow High School in Midwood. And she was wearing Doc Martens, mismatched wool socks, according to the article. And she said this, "It's a little frowned upon if somebody doesn't show up to the meeting of the Luddite Club. We're here every Sunday, rain or shine, even in the snow, and we don't keep in touch with each other, so you have to show up." And so they gathered some logs, they kind of pulled them together to sit on in a circle, and some pulled out sketchbooks to draw in. Others were painting with watercolor kits. Remember when adult coloring was a thing a couple years ago, and people were kind of using this to get serenity and watercolor? I've seen adults, some people that I know, I'm not going to name names, are doing this watercolor painting right now. It's kind of a paint-by-number thing for adults. Hey, it's a cool activity. One of the kids who was there didn't have a book, didn't have a watercolor painting kit. She just closed her eyes to listen to the wind. But many pulled out some books. Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, The Consolation of Philosophy, other notable titles. Some libertine writers, Hunter S. Thompson, Jack Kerouac, who wrote, of course, On the Road. They also have a fondness in the Luddite Club for reading works that condemn technology, like Player Piano by Kurt Vonnegut. Lola Shubb, who is another student in the Luddite Club, said, quote, "Lots of us have read this book called Into the Wild," referring to John Krakauer's 1996 nonfiction book about Chris McCandless, a nomad who died while trying to live off the land in Alaska in the wilderness. And Lola Shub said, quote, "We've all got this theory that we're not just meant to be confined to buildings and work." And that guy was experiencing life, real life. Social media and phones are not real life. And she went on to say, this student named Lola Shub, a senior at the Essex Street Academy, she said, "When I got my flip phone, things instantly changed. I started using my brain. It made me observe myself as a person. I've been trying to write a book, too. It's like 12 pages now." End of quote. You gotta love this. I absolutely love this story. This is amazing. And they're spreading the gospel of the Luddite Club. And they're trying to attract other students to it. So it was actually founded. The Luddite Club was founded last year by another student at Murrow High School named Logan Lane. And she named the club, the Luddite Club, after Ned Ludd. Now, you've probably heard the expression Luddite before, obviously. But a little history lesson here. It's traced back to this guy named Ned Ludd, L-U-D-D. And he was a textile worker in England in the 18th century. And apparently he just had it. He'd had it with the Industrial Revolution, and he smashed up a mechanized loom, you know, in the textile industry, broke the loom, and I guess the fruit of the loom, if you will, the fruit of the broken loom, if you'll pardon my extremely bad pun, was inspiring others to take up his name and riot against industrialization. So that's where the Luddites came from. Now, I took the trouble to look up the dictionary definition of Luddite, and there's a couple. It can obviously be used as a derogatory term, as an insult towards a person opposed to new technology or ways of working, such as a small-minded Luddite resisting progress, or I'm not a Luddite. After all, I work with the internet for my job. But of course, the historical meaning goes back to this guy Ned Ludd and the bands of English workers who destroyed machinery, especially in cotton mills and woolen mills. They believed that this machinery was going to threaten their jobs, their livelihood. Wait till the Optimus bots come. Then I guess they had a beef there. There's no question they're right to be concerned about that. So anyways, that's where the term Luddite gets its meaning from. And so the club members in this interview that was done by the New York Times, Alex Vadukil, interviews the members of the Luddite Club in Prospect Park in the Brooklyn area. And the founder of this club was Logan Lane, and she's a 17-year-old senior. And she has kind of got this thing going at different schools now. And one of the students that was interviewed, the student's name was Baruch Watling, who's a senior at Beacon High School in Manhattan. Uses a green-painted flip phone with a picture of Lauryn Hill on it from her days with the Fugees. And Baruch Watling said, "I just held the first successful Luddite meeting at Beacon High School. I hear there's talk of spreading it at Brooklyn Tech," another student said. So this is just really intriguing how these kids are eschewing the smartphone. Jameson Butler, who's one of the original members of the Luddite Club, he was interviewed while he was carving a piece of wood with a pocket knife in Prospect Park. And he explained, quote, "I've weeded out who I want to be friends with. Now it takes work for me to maintain friendships. Some people reached out when I got off the iPhone and said, I don't like texting with you anymore because your texts are green. That told me a lot," end of quote. So, by the way, in case you're wondering what that means, in case you don't know, maybe you're still using a flip phone. And apparently this is a good thing. The iPhone, now the ubiquitous iPhone, of course, has a feature called iMessage, and that's the one that most iPhone users use to text people with, although some might use WhatsApp because Android users use WhatsApp and other people use WhatsApp. It's kind of a shared medium of exchange, if you will, for some people. But with kids especially, iPhones are really status symbols among teenagers. They aspire to really own iPhones, not Android devices in general. And so when you text someone, when you use iMessage and you're using an iPhone, if it's an iPhone messaging another iPhone, the conversation bubbles in the text chat will be blue. But if someone comes into the chat using an Android phone or another kind of device, maybe a flip phone, you can still text from them. Your conversation, if you're not using an iPhone, will be in green bubbles. So that's kind of, ooh, if you're a green bubble guy or gal, you automatically get knocked down a couple rungs on the social ladder, if you will. V. De La Cruz, who was another student who was there, said, if you post something on social media, you don't get enough likes, then you don't feel good about yourself. That shouldn't have to happen to anyone. Being in this club reminds me we're all living on a floating rock and that it's all going to be okay. So the writer of this piece in the New York Times, Alex Vadukal, set out to interview the founder of the Luddite Club and caught up with her, Logan Lane, after she came out of school at 3 p.m. at Murrow High School. And as he describes it, you know, the bell rings, the kids just flow out of the building, and the first thing that they do is they start looking down at their smartphones, but not Logan Lane. So she sat down with him for an interview at a coffee shop called Chock Full of Nuts. And if you're from the New York area, I don't know if that's a chain or not, or whether that's just a local coffee shop. I don't know. Chock Full of Nuts, but cool name. And apparently she came for this interview wearing a baggy corduroy jacket and quilted jeans that she had stitched herself using a Singer sewing machine. And she said, we're having trouble recruiting members, but we don't really mind it. All of us have bonded over this unique cause. To be in the Luddite Club, there's always a level of being a misfit to it. But I wasn't always a Luddite, of course. End of quote. So how did she get into this? How did the Luddite Club come to be? Well, this girl, Logan Lane, during the early days of the pandemic, during one of the lockdown periods, she said that her social media use took a troubling turn. And she said, quote, I became completely consumed. I couldn't not post a good picture if I had one. In other words, she had to do it. I couldn't not post a good picture if I had one. And I had this online personality of, I don't care, but I actually did. I was definitely still watching everything, end of quote. Well, eventually she just got so burned out that she deleted her Instagram app. No more selfies for her. But it wasn't enough for her. So she said, I had to go one step further. I had to put my phone in a box and she didn't take it out. So for the first time, she experienced what life in the city was like as a teenager without an iPhone. She borrowed novels from the library. Well, that's a novel idea. Read them alone. Read the novels alone in the park. How countercultural. She started admiring graffiti when she rode the subway. And then she, now I'm not saying this is a good thing, but she fell in with a group of teens who were into graffiti art. And they actually taught her how to spray paint in a freight train yard in Queens. And oddly enough, without her phone, she started waking up without an alarm at 7 a.m. She no longer fell asleep to the glow of her phone at midnight, as the article says. Excuse me. She later wrote in a text called The Luddite Manifesto about she fantasized about tossing her phone into the Gowanus Canal. So what did her parents think of all this? Logan Lane, the 17-year-old who founded the Luddite Club. Well, they kind of appreciated it on one level because she was actually coming home at dinner time and she was telling them interesting things about things she was doing every day. But they were kind of worried too because she wasn't using her iPhone anymore. They couldn't keep track of her whereabouts, you know, using parental controls, using GPS. They couldn't call her. How are you doing on a Friday night? Are you okay? Are you safe? She went to Paris for a summer abroad student program. And she conveniently, quote unquote, lost the smartphone they gave her to take on the trip. So they were just beside themselves wondering what's going on. She's in Europe. We can't get a hold of her. So when she came back, they said, look, you have to at least carry a flip phone. Okay, if you're not going to use your iPhone, fine. But please at least use a flip phone. And Logan Lane said this. She said, quote, I still long to have no phone at all, but my parents are so addicted. My mom got on Twitter and I've seen it tear her apart. But I guess I also like this because I get to feel a little superior to them, end of quote. So that's an interesting quote. We'll come back to that in a second. And so she kind of met this other student, Jameson Butler, who became sort of the charter member of the Luddite Club at an all-ages punk show. And he had his flip phone. They started talking about it. Why do you have a flip phone? Why don't you have a smartphone? They started bonding over their worldview. And Logan Lane said, this kid was a freshman, Jameson Butler, and he was so well-read. He was so smart. And we just kind of bonded. We walked in the park. We had apple cider and donuts. We shared our Luddite experiences. And that was the first meeting of the Luddite Club. So how about that? So the gospel of the Luddite Club began to spread in the halls of her high school, Murrow High School. And she found this girl, Odelie, to join the club. Then Max, then Clem, started hanging up posters in the school, recounting the life story of Ned Ludd. And people started to kind of become aware of it. There was a school fair where like people could sign up to different groups and clubs. She put out a little table for the Luddite Club. And at first nobody came to it, and people started to show up. And now there's about 25 members at her school. And like I said earlier, this club, this idea is spreading to other high schools in the area. And they do invite students to come. They're welcome to come if they're still using smartphones, but they don't even make them sort of put them in a box at the beginning of the meeting. They just sort of invite them to accept the challenge of ignoring their phone at least for 1 hour, at least during their meeting, and just see what it's like. So this is just really intriguing. I wonder what you think about this. And Logan Lane got a bit of a challenge from another student, though. Another student was kind of making fun of them, or ribbing them, if you will, because this student considered the Luddite Club to actually be classist. Why? Because this person was saying, well, some students actually need technology to actually conduct their lives, to fit in society. Some people actually need a phone. And so the backlash is, according to Logan Lane, that they're a bunch of rich kids expecting everyone to drop their phones. And they're actually being privileged. They're actually acting like privileged, classist kids in order to do that. Now, obviously, that argument cuts both ways. Some people might say it's classist to say that everyone needs to have a phone. Everyone needs to have a smartphone. And so they really thought about this, though. Are they really being privileged? Are we not thinking about this right? And she said she went to an advisor at the high school, and he told her, hey, a lot of revolutions actually start with people from industrial backgrounds. And, you know, carry on, essentially. And she said, hey, you know, we're just seeing a problem in society. Mental health, screen use, they might be connected. They just might be connected. So just a really interesting article in the New York Times about the Luddite Club. Now, Logan Lane's father, Seth Lane, interesting, he was also interviewed for the piece, and oddly enough, he works in IT. He works in information technology. And he was asked about, hey, what do you think about what your daughter's doing? He said, well, I'm proud of her. I'm proud of her and what they represent. But there's also the parent side of things. There are times when we just don't know where she is. And parents want to, this is the helicopter parent generation, if you will. And they, you know, we want to follow our kids wherever they are. We want to protect them. We want to keep them safe. And it's a little Orwellian, he said, but when she got rid of her iPhone, that presented a problem for us, at least initially. And so I can appreciate that as a parent. I haven't reached the teenage years yet as a parent, but a lot of you guys are parents. And what would you do? What would you say if your student just all of a sudden said, I'm not using my smartphone anymore. In fact, I don't want to use a phone at all. You won't be able to reach me. You won't be able to get me. I'm just eschewing technology. Would you at least make them use a flip phone like her parents did? What do you think? 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're talking about the Luddite Club, a club of high school students that are eschewing smartphones and technology, profiled in the New York Times recently. So I just want to close this off here. This is actually some great, great writing here by the author of this piece, Alex Vadukal, writing in the New York Times. This is really well done. Just finishing off the piece, he talked about how night was falling, quote, on the park as the teens walked in the cold and traded high school gossip. But a note of tension seemed to form in the air when the topic of college admissions came up. The club members exchanged updates about the schools they had applied to across the country. Odili reported getting into the State University of New York. And one of the other students, Elena Scherer, said, "You could totally start a Luddite club there, I bet." Taking a shortcut, they headed down a lonely path that had no park lamps. Their talk livened when they discussed the poetry of Lewis Carroll, the piano compositions of Ravel, and the evils of TikTok. Elena pointed at the night sky. "Look," she said, "that's a waxing gibbous. That means it's going to get bigger." As they marched through the dark, the only light glowing on their faces was that of the moon. A really great, great way to end that off. That's a great turn of phrase there. The only light glowing on their faces was that of the moon. Obviously not that of their smartphones. And I know, I just messed up. It's Ravel. The composer is Ravel, right? Shows how uncultured I am. But what do you think of this story? I thought it was a great story. 888-914-9149. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back after this. 888-914-9149. Talk to you in a minute. Ever dreamt of seeing the sights in Italy? St. Peter's Basilica, the Sistine Chapel, Drew Mariani in the Colosseum fighting to the death. More info on our September Eucharistic Revival pilgrimage at relevantradio.com/Italy. Seats are limited.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to the show. That's right, 888-914-9149. Just before the break, we were talking about a really intriguing piece in the New York Times about the Luddite Club, a group of high school students that have basically tossed their smartphones. Some of them are using flip phones. Some of them aren't using phones at all. And they seem like a lot happier than maybe a lot of people think they would be. What do you think about this? 888-914-9149. Let's go to Will in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Will.
Hey, Cale. I got rid of my phone several months ago.
Oh, wow.
And
how old are you, Will?
I'm 21 years old, and I really wish I had done it when I was 14 because...
Wow.
Yeah, it was. It's just been very, very nice. You know, I was kind of a reason I tossed it out a bit, or at least the main motivating factor was, you know, I had struggled since I was a very young teenager. Before I was even a teenager, of some not so PG material on my phone, to put it in family friendly.
Catch your drift,
in a family-friendly way. But, when I was, I got one of those Wise phones that Matt Frad promotes on Pints of Aquinas.
Okay.
And it only really has text, calls, and maps, and it's on a smartphone-like interface, but it's designed to be used as little as possible. And, I just have so much more energy. I'm reading a lot more. I'm working out more. It's really been a huge transformation in my life. I think they're designing these phones to be more and more addictive, and you know, you're getting less and less satisfaction the more you use it. So I hope I don't have to go back to having a smartphone anytime soon.
Wow, that's an incredible testimony, Will, because of your age. You're exactly the target demographic for a lot of the apps that are out there, obviously, especially social media apps. You mentioned, obviously, the problem with, let's face it, let's just call it for what it is, with pornography on phones, on the internet. Any phone with an internet connection can access that. And kids at a very, very young age are doing exactly that. And they're they're getting messed up in a lot of different ways, and this isn't healthy. And there are a lot of other unhealthy things about it. And what's really intriguing about this is that, you know, you don't have any regrets about ditching the smartphone and just going to what people would call a dumb phone, but maybe that's really the smart thing to do. So no regrets. You'd never want to go back.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. It's very hard. I have to go to, because I'm still a student, I'm taking online classes right now.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But, you know, I have to go to the public library a few hours a day and work on classes. You know, sometimes when I'm at home and I desperately need to check my email, I have to ask my mom to let me borrow her phone. There's definitely a lot of drawbacks, and I think society is moving in a direction right now where we're becoming more and more dependent on technology.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that I'm at least able during one part of my life, and while I'm still in my formative years, and you know, I'm still a student and everything, that I'm able to ditch the phone, because it's a special time, definitely. I hope to prolong it if I could. That'd be great.
It will. Well, I appreciate you calling in, man. That's a great take. That is a really, really good take. And as you said, obviously, for work purposes, you're going to have to sometimes tap into technology. But if you're able to limit that and limit your use of it outside of work, you might wind up being a much more healthy person. And I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true, but that less than 1%, this is about men in the United States, less than 1% of men in the United States actually exercise on a regular basis. If that's true, that's pretty bad. But a lot of the reason for that, I think, is just, let's face it, people go to work, or maybe they're working from home all day, they're using tech all day, they're using their laptop, they're using their computer screen, they're using their smartphone, they're on Slack, they're on email all the time. And then they come home after a soul-sucking commute, which could be an hour or two if you're living in a big city, and then they go home, they maybe grab some takeout, flop on the couch, and binge watch Netflix or watch sports. And they're sedentary. And I mean, there's certainly an aspect of that as well, just this idea that you can, you've got more energy. Will said he's got more energy. He's got more time to actually read a physical book. Wow, imagine that. By the way, I'm not anti-technology by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think there is a great case to be made for limiting technology. And what's interesting about these kids in the Luddite Club in the Brooklyn area, profiled in the New York Times, is that this is really the true countercultural movement. It's not going with it. It's totally going against the flow. And I just find this intriguing on so many levels. And another, just before we move on, because a lot of other callers want to get in on this, and if you have a take on this, you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show right here on Relevant Radio. This idea that, I think Will said something to the effect of smartphone makers, they know what is addictive for people. They know how to reel people in. And I remember Cal Newport, who's written extensively in this area of technology and how to use it, how not to use it, is the author of the book Deep Work. He's also written a book called Digital Minimalism, A World Without Email. And one of the things that he said, you know, he's got a TED Talk. If you want to go on YouTube, if you want to watch a really short and interesting TED Talk, it's from a few years ago, but it's still super relevant right now. Cal Newport did a TED Talk called Quit Social Media. So just search for that on YouTube. You'll find it. Quit Social Media. And he talks about how when many social media sites were first implemented, like Facebook, etc., they actually consulted with officials from the gambling industry, people in Vegas, how can we make these apps more addictive for people so that they can't stop? They can't put it down. And it's true. I mean, I do use Twitter. I am basically a non-factor anymore. Like I haven't looked at Facebook in years. And sometimes I think I need to go back for work purposes and stuff, but I really just don't want to. I do like Twitter because I learn a lot on Twitter, but I can even find myself scrolling for extended periods of time. And it's really easy to go down those rabbit holes, as you know, and it can be addictive. That's for sure. So lots of interesting takes on this. I know you've got some. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Paula in Fridley, Minnesota. Hi, Paula.
Hey, hi. Well, Will's certainly an inspiration.
Yeah, really intriguing, huh?
21 years old and not, and it's so hard to function in this world without a smartphone. I finally caved in myself 2 years mm-hmm. ago. I'm pushing 60, so I'm used to living without one. But our daughter, in elementary school, she of course went to parochial school, but she was the only one without a phone, and except for one other person. And we didn't even get her a phone until 10th grade because she was taking the city bus. And we really needed, and it was, it looked like a remote control. wasn't even a flip phone.
Right.
But when she turned 18, she was a senior, and we did give her a smartphone. But noticed a difference almost right away, within just a few short months, and just on a whole lot of different levels. And I think it really does affect. I noticed a difference in myself. I'm pushing 60. So, it's like the instantaneous thoughts. Everything has to be instantaneous. And, my husband's keeping us all together. He doesn't even have a phone at all. So, but no, I strongly recommend parents not to give their kids a phone, as far as, there's peer pressure and all that stuff, but they don't really need it. They think they need it. It did have an effect on her social. It was a mm-hmm. lot easier for her socially because she was missing out on a lot of things with her kids. But I think this Luddick Club, I want to start one up for not just teens. I think we should just start them up.
Start them for adults, too. Absolutely. Everybody.
Oh. Gosh, really bad. I mean, I thought I had a problem with the desktop computer and Facebook, and I finally let that go. But I needed, I was a caregiver for my mom for a long time, and so I needed to help me. I needed, the smartphone was really, made a big difference. But now, now that I'm not a caregiver anymore, I'm looking at this thinking, I got a problem. I do. I got a problem. I think most people do. It's so quickly distracting. We're watching TV, but I'm also playing a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's focus is a big problem. And thanks for your call, Paula. Really interesting insights there. And I found it, thought it was kind of funny when you said that you gave your daughter, before smartphones were really out there, you gave her a phone just so you could keep in contact with her when she was on the city bus, and it looked like a remote control. I remember when, this is like late 90s, early 2000s, I had this, there was a trend, you guys remember this, when phones were just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. This is before the advent of smartphones, obviously, and really even before BlackBerries were like super popular in the mainstream. I had a little Motorola phone that could fit in the palm of my hand. This thing was tiny. It was super, super tiny. And just how things have changed. Now, obviously, everybody wants like a massive, huge screen, at least, 6.7 inches in the palm of your hand, so that you can partake in all this media, video, all that sort of stuff. And how things have changed. Unbelievable stuff. Paula, thank you so much for calling in there. All right, let's go to Mike in Miami. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, sir. How you doing?
Good. I'm a Northern Alberta farm kid, transplanted through teaching in Brooklyn, New York, transplanted to retired in Miami, Florida. And I would just say, we grew up, of course, without phones. We actually had a party line. So that's where you have four or five families on the same phone line. And depending on the ring on the box, you picked up because that was your family's ring. And a lot of people don't know about that at all. And we would go to fields and work in the fields and come home, 2.5 miles to come home, and very often meet up with coyotes or wolves on the roads as we were coming back. And there were no phones. There was nothing. Now, technology is such that if parents are really freaking out and whatever big city you're in, if you want to really pay attention to your kids, you don't need to have them on a phone. You can get a GPS tracker. You can pay a small charge every month, and you can have your kids connected to that tracker, and you know where they are all the time. There's modern ways around these issues with the phones. I like the phone personally for communication. When you grow up in a place where you can't communicate with anyone because of mileage, distance, you know, it's nice to have it for that. So that's my two cents anyway.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling in. And I love your career trajectory, and definitely winding up in sunny Florida is not a bad gig, not a bad gig at all. That was Mike in Miami. And let's go to Patrick, line six, Ginger in Dallas. Hi, Ginger.
Hi, Kale. Hey,
great I was to talk
just,
to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much for taking my call. I was listening to you talk about this club, and I thought, you know, well, I'm pushing 62 like one of the other callers, and I thought, you know, back in the day, I hate to sound old, but, you know, we were, when I went to college, my mom wasn't tracking me. You know, mm-hmm. she knew yeah. I was at college. You know, we couldn't call. It was long distance. It would cost money. But, I mean, she just trusted that I was okay. You know what? I survived college without a phone or a car. And my kids, you know, their ages 24 to 30, so smartphones were just coming in mm-hmm. when they were in high school. And so we skirted this whole app thing and all of that. So my husband and I feel like we were lucky. But, you know, it caused me more anxiety when my kids were in college and I would look and see where they were at 2 in the morning.
That's an interesting take.
And I'm like, this is causing me such anxiety. If I didn't know what they were doing, it was almost better for me. You know, I'd pray for them.
Yeah.
But if I tracked them and I saw that they weren't in their dorm, I'm like, what are they doing? You know, so
yeah,
really,
exactly.
You know, I kind of, that was a crux for a parent that I could have done without.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, Ginger. This whole idea of if you flip it around, it actually might cause you more anxiety to know exactly where they are at every moment. And obviously, when they're minors, when they're under your care, when they're young, it's probably a little bit of a different ballgame. But you mentioned kids in college and your own college experience. Obviously, yeah, I remember those days where calling home, man, you had to scrounge up enough money for the payphone to call home, and you just couldn't text or FaceTime or anything like that. And it was kind of a rare thing, maybe even to call home, and parents just didn't know what their kids were up to. They just kind of had to trust, and maybe their faith muscle was a little bit stronger, you know, in terms of trusting their kids to God and all that stuff. But that's an interesting. I like the way you flip that around, Ginger. It's true. You don't want to get too nostalgic about the good old days. But producer Jim and I were talking about this before the show, that when we were kids, it was quite easy for us to just go out into the neighborhood, and maybe things are different now. I'm sure there was evil in the world back then, but maybe communities were stronger, maybe the networking among parents was a little bit better, but we just felt free to just go out into the neighborhood and play and come back before supper or when the streetlights go on, whatever the case may be. And there was just a little bit more of a safety factor where you could have that freedom. What's interesting is talking about this story in the New York Times about these kids. And again, what's so fascinating about this story about the Luddite Club in the New York Times, these high school students who are doing this countercultural move of getting rid of their smartphones, flip phones only, if you even have a phone, and they're meeting in the woods every Sunday to just read books. Wow. How rebellious is that? Read books. Cal Newport, this guy, I mentioned him just a few moments ago. He reacted to this story. Here's what Cal Newport said on his blog about this story. He talked about when he was promoting his book, Digital Minimalism, back in 2019. And he was on this book tour. And he said he kept meeting with these parents. And he kept hearing the same story over and over and over again. Their teenage children were basically doing exactly what the Luddite Club is doing. These parents kept telling him their teenage children were fed up with the shallowness of online life, and they decided all on their own, with no parental nudging or pushing or cajoling or whatever, they decided all on their own, these teenagers, to deactivate their social media accounts and in some cases abandon their smartphones altogether. And so he's kind of optimistic about technology addiction not being a problem, hopefully, in the future. And he says this, quote, "We're approaching a moment in which not using these apps will be seen as the authentic countercultural move. We don't need to convince teenagers to stop using their phones. We just need them to discover on their own just how uncool these online media conglomerates with their creepy geek overlords really are." End of quote. That's a good take. And he also said, in response to, in particular, to the story about the Luddite Club, he's like, "More of this, please. This is exactly what teenagers in Brooklyn should be doing, according to Newport. Reading books they don't understand yet, getting into trouble, trying on intellectual identities without worrying about widespread scrutiny, sewing their own jeans, and yep, if they want, whittling sticks with a knife." How long did we really think young people would be willing to give up all of this wonderful mess in exchange for monotonously boosting the value of Meta stock? And Meta, of course, is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. So he basically ends off by saying Zuckerberg is screwed. Zuckerberg is screwed. Because I got to take a break. I got to get out. My producer is yelling at me. I got to get out. So hang with me. Call in 888-914-9149. If you're on the line, we'll get to you after the break. Try as best we can. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Looking for a new job? How about one that offers you opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
That's right. We're talking about this really cool piece that came out in the New York Times about the Luddite Club, a group of high school students who are countercultural. They're meeting in the woods. They've ditched their smartphones. And in a way, they're actually kind of looking down on their parents' generation for using them. Interesting quote from the piece by the founder of the Luddite Club. This would really, really grab my attention here. She said, My mom is on Twitter, and I'm just finding the quote here. "My parents are so addicted. My mom got on Twitter. I've seen it tear her apart. But I also like being offline because I get to feel a little superior to them." And so this is how the next generation feels about smartphones, social media. Things are not looking great for these tech companies. Let's go to EJ calling in St. Paul, Minnesota. You can call in to 888-914-9149. Hi, EJ.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling in.
Awesome. I just wanted to thank you for having this rich conversation. Actually, I locked your radio station into my car.
Love
I just
it.
Enjoyed this so much. I can't wait to get home to my son. I got a 12-year-old and a 19-year-old, and like I was telling the screener, when my biggest mistake I've made as a father so far, I can honestly say, was giving my 13-year-old son a smartphone. I took it away. Mm-hmm. He ended up getting one, and it was a big wedge in our family. But I didn't see his face for 2.5 years.
So wow.
My wife and I have been, it was tough. So our 12-year-old son now, we're about to move to a more rural area.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we've discussed it, and we want to give him the flip phone. But selling him on it, you know, is a whole other story. So when I heard you talking about this Luddite Club, I literally just couldn't wait to get home to, you know, pull this article up to the New York Times, I think you said.
Yes.
And you know, get set to talk to him, sit down, and maybe read it to him like a bedtime story, which I haven't done in a long time. But you know,
that's cool.
I think you know these people that you're referencing in this article or in this I don't know, editorial or what. It's great. It's great. You know.
Yeah. I'm so happy to hear this, and I'm so glad that you called in, EJ. And by the way, I'll put a link to the article in the show notes, so you can click on that. The podcast for this show will be available probably about 15 minutes or so, 15 or 20 minutes after the show ends. You can check it out, and we'll have the link to that article in the show notes, or you can just try Googling it, the Luddite Club, New York Times. It should come up. and hopefully it's not behind a paywall. But it's a really intriguing article. And I like what you said, EJ, when, well, I mean, I didn't like to hear this, but you said that the biggest parenting mistake that you made ever was getting your 13-year-old child a smartphone. You did not see his face for 2 years. And that's I think, an all too familiar story for a lot of parents. And wow, that's, and it is hard to sell kids on, hey, well, you should go for the flip phone. The Motorola Razr was pretty cool when it came out. I mean, it's probably a tough sell for sure for a lot of kids, but I'm just very intrigued, and I find it kind of strangely heartwarming that it's young people who are recognizing this now. Like, I don't feel good about this. I don't like this. I don't like the way this is making me feel. And these kids that were profiled, by the way, in the article, what's really intriguing about them is that they're thinking in a way that I think people don't. I mean, when you're in the online world, like somebody, there was a part in the article where somebody accused them of being elitist for, oh, you're kind of making your own classist kind of privileged group here, raising yourself above other people. And it actually bothered the kids, and they actually engaged with that idea. But when people are online, very often what they'll do is they only associate with people who think like they do. There's so much tribalism out there. Everybody else is an enemy, and there can never be any conversation or growth. You only find you're kind of living in this echo chamber where you're like, I don't know, in the Catholic world, there's always a battle between, radical traditionalists and those who, for example, support, I don't know, the Novus Ordo Mass, just to give one example, where they're kind of at odds with each other. And people who are into Pope Francis, people that don't like his teachings or whatever the case may be, there's so many examples of this. And I find these kids, like, maybe because they're reading and they're not, you know, they're just thinking for themselves, which I think is a really good thing. All right, let's go to Lynn in Kenmore, Washington. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kale. Are you there?
Hey, I sure am. Yep, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think this is great. I would like to have one of those Luddite buttons because, you know, in the 50s, they had the Mickey Mouse Club, and people got the little ears and stuff with the Mickey Mouse Club. But anyway, I think this is really great because kids are reading books again, and in the public libraries, I don't see anybody using any books, reading books. They're just using the computers.
Yep.
But the other thing about cell phones, now I'm talking to you on a landline, and I do have a flip phone, but I found that... you know, one of my concerns about phones in general, the well, even flip phones for that matter, is that it crosses that blood-brain barrier, you know, because you're, and that's concerning for people using them frequently, as many kids do.
Yeah, let me just hop in there real quick. Yeah, that's a whole other concern. I do think there's something to that. We'll maybe get into this on another show. There's been some studies done about, you know, people just have their phones in their pockets, and that can affect things like reproductive health even. And I'm not making that up. I know a lot of people aren't concerned about this at all, but there's been some recent studies that have come up saying, maybe not the greatest thing in the world. But again, you raised some amazing points, Erlan. But thank you for calling in. You're futuristic. You've got a flip phone. You're calling from a landline. I love it. Let's go quickly to Michael in San Diego. Hey, Michael.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, sir.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. If you recall the movie Dead Poets Society, it rings true to that as well, too, right? What did the teacher say, "Oh, captain, my captain," when everybody stood on top of the chairs in the classroom to get a new perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting, Michael, that you mentioned the Dead Poets Society, because when I read this article, the first thing I thought of was some years ago, I'd met this guy named Eddie Cotter Jr., and he started this group called the Dead Theologians Society. I might have talked about this on the air before. And it was a program for high school students to teach them the Catholic faith. It was kind of based off Dead Poets Society. The dead theologians are the saints. And so, but the trick is, of course, they're more alive than we are because they're with God in heaven. So the kids would meet in these little underground chapels. They'd light, you know, candles, burn incense, and play Gregorian chant music. And it was totally countercultural. But the kids ate it up. They loved it because it was so different from everything else they were experiencing. It's that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this piece in the New York Times about the Luddite Society. So Anyway, so me and a few other friends started up a chapter of the Dead Theologian Society in our parish, and it was a big hit. Kids really loved it, and I think that this really hits on a lot of those vibes. It's a bit, oddly enough, it's a bit rebellious. It's countercultural, but it kind of brings people back to some things that maybe we all ought to be doing, is looking a lot less at our phones, at our screens, getting our nose in a book, a physical book, interacting with the physical world outside. I love the fact these kids met outside in a park and they were just kind of experiencing nature in a certain sense. And the line about one kid just closing her eyes and listening to the wind. Wow. I mean, what kids don't do stuff like that anymore because they're overscheduled. I could go on a huge rant, but I won't because we're out of time. But you can call in tomorrow and talk about this again. That's Cale Clark Show. We will be back on this program in 23 hours. So I hope that you'll join me live on Relevant Radio. But don't forget, Faith Explained, 12:30 Central tomorrow as we do our scripture study, going through the book of Exodus. Really cool stuff. It's a lot of fun. Be countercultural. Read the Bible. It's got new stuff in it. Even though it's an old book, God speaks to us afresh every day. Jim Shaper produced today this episode of the Cale Clark Show. Patrick Aluck took your phone calls. See you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.